the conference committee on the Omnibus Liquor Bill will come to order. We've got all of our members here, and what I think people have talked and come up with some solutions. I know we have a few amendments. I thought the way we'd proceed on this, we can go relatively rapidly. We just take it section by section, explain where we're at, what the differences might be, and then we can have some members make motions, or I'll call on you, and we'll just build the bill. So with that, let's just start off with section one. And it is my understanding, in fact, I'll just say this is dealing with the bulk wine. The two bills are different. I think, is there anybody on the committee that was the House author? I don't know who had the bulk wine in the, was that yours?
Either Kiefer or Holman.
Okay, well then why don't we have Representative Atkins make the motion for the House language in section one. That would be on the House language, lines 1.8 to 1.20.
So
Representative Atkins moves that. Any discussion? And seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails. Section 1 is adopted. Section 2, this is a provision that the House has, the Senate does not have. We're aware of the concept that under current law, well, I guess I should say it was assumed that a farm winery would be on agricultural land, but the truth is that does not exist in statute. There is not great controversy at this moment about the concept of that at all. However, I think we have a solution. We talked earlier about this, that the particular...
that's my pizza.
So, yes, we're talking beer, and we need some pizza. The issue is that...
Do you want to stop for a roll
What's
call?
That? Yeah.
We got to do that roll call.
John, you want to do this
roll call? I got to be on a roll call, but I want to be here for this piece here. So
okay.
Can we just hold for just a second? It's a nuclear storage issue.
We'll just move on to some other parts.
All right.
Okay.
All
right, we will come back to that because this is a provision that Senator Howe had some interest in coming up with an answer there. So we're just going to pass that. And do you want to go ahead and shall we do the Gopher Stadium?
Wait for me.
Let's keep going.
Oh, you got to do that too. All right.
Maybe we could just get that pizza that we were trying
to. Do I have enough members here? Now I don't, do I? Where did Senator Hall go?
He went to vote, too.
Do I? Am I supposed to vote? What are they voting on?
The nuclear.
Just that.
I'm leaving. I have a firmly established record on that issue. I don't think I need to worry about it. All right, we'll just hold on for our moment for them. We don't have
Should
enough.
We just run through the sections that are identical where there's no controversy and it goes up, or do we not?
Well, we can't knock them off because we only have two of us. We need three senators.
Got it.
So we have to sit on that.
What do you guys do? You could run through the explanations, though.
They'll be back in a moment.
Just doing calendar bills today?
Yes.
Do you, Chris, though, if you're already checked in?
What's that?
Do you really need to have all three of you if you're already checked in? Since quorum has been established?
That's a good question. Do we need to have the... I think we have to have the votes, actually, though, or...?
The history's been if nobody raises a quorum call, you can proceed, but if anybody objects to it, then you've got a problem.
Okay. Well, then let's do this. As long as nobody's going to object, let's go to some pieces that we know are going to be very simple to do. Let me mark off that one is done. With that being the case, and as long as there's not going to be objections... Let's go to, we can go to section 5. This is going to be on R3, page R3 at the very bottom. It starts on line 4.1 on the Senate language, 4.19 on the House side. This is the, and then it, of course, goes on to the next page. This was I think it was Latz and Simon provision. That was heard last year and was not included in the omnibus bill. And we have identical language in both the House and the Senate, and it deals with the marketing of the clothing apparel with in an exclusive liquor store. And then also Section 6 has to do with tastings in exclusive liquor stores. Oh, that was great.
61.
Thank God you got there in time.
We decided to jump ahead on some of the provisions that we that are identical. We're dealing with the LATS provisions and the Simon pieces on the exclusive liquor stores.
What section?
Clothing apparel. This would be Section 5. It's on. It starts on the very bottom of R3,
okay,
and runs into R4. So those two sections are identical. That would be. Why don't we have Senator Reinert move adoption of the Senate language, lines 4.1 all the way through to line 5.16. That would encompass both of those identical provisions, sections 5 and 6. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Then we are we adopt those. Those ones are 5 and 6 are done. Let's go back to the agricultural land issue. Since when Senator Howe is back. Where's Senator Howe? We're not going to go back to that. Let's take up TCF. Let's jump around then. Okay, we're going to section. It's section 2 in the Senate language, and it's section 3 on the House side. So I'm at starting at lines 1.16 on the Senate language, and starting at line 2.4 on the House side. This is the Gophers or the TCF stadium issue, and I believe there is an amendment for that. We heard this original bill in the Senate a year ago. Then a deal was reached, and we did not have a hearing on the details of this. However, we did have a floor vote on it, and the Senate was included in the bill. And so I'm going to call on Senator Michel. You had some questions or some comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I wonder if Mr. Iverson could join us at the table. Mr. Iverson, Todd Iverson from the University of Minnesota. So I think Chair Gerlach outlined it pretty well. What I would add is the hearing that the Senate had last year was on, actually, I think the language was two sentences that we had last year, which was basically just let the university decide what and when and how they want to deal with alcohol at any of their facilities. So the language before us now, which admittedly is identical, so I don't think we're going to need to spend a lot of time on it. But the language before us now is a little more than one or two sentences. And so I wanted to get a little from Mr. Iverson and then maybe even some from our House colleagues here, a little more of the history on this, because my sense is that there was a lot more work and discussion in committee and maybe in side hallways, which is fine. But just to give the Senate a better sense for how this evolved and how you see this playing out.
Mr. Iverson,
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity. I will try to be brief, and if the Senate has questions, I will be happy to fill in or answer in the best way I possibly can and look to the House members for help as well. As you're all aware, originally the university's plan for TCF Bank Stadium was to sell alcohol in the suites or the premium seating areas only. Back in 2009, the legislature, and particularly the House, had an objection to that, and language was passed that stated that if we were to sell it in the luxury boxes, we needed to sell it to everyone in the stadium. The Regents at that point chose not to sell alcohol anywhere in the stadium. And then in 2010, the statute was changed to state that if we sold it to a third of the stadium, we could sell it in the premium boxes. The Regents again chose not to take any action on that and continued to not sell alcohol. Over the last year, we've had various meetings with concerned parties, and have a new president and some new members on the Board of Regents, and have talked with various members of the legislature, and came to a compromise that I think will work for everyone, and that is that we will be selling a beer in a single location in TCF Bank Stadium that will be in the stadium and convenient for the general public, and that will allow us to sell it in the premium seats as well, which is a significant issue because of the revenue that can be generated from that and the entertainment market that we're in TCF, particularly the premium seating, is in competition with all the pro sports franchises. Yep. And in order to sell those premium seats will really assist us. The House is where this language went on first, and I want to thank the House members who worked on it. Representative Atkins, Representative Hoppe, Representative Lilly, and really all the members of the House for their really determination to try to solve this. And then, again, thank you to the Senate for kind of taking it on faith. So if you have questions, this will require action by the Board of Regents after this language is approved. I have indications from the Board of Regents that they would look favorably on this, but I can't speak to that until they've taken action.
And so, Mr. Chair?
Senator Michelle.
And so, Mr. Iverson, so we've now gone from a legislative thought that make it available to at least a third to now it's going to be available to anyone who is of legal age. Is that right?
That's correct, in one location.
In one spot. And so that's, Mr. Chair, so that's the kind of this beer garden concept. I don't even know if that is the wording used in legislation. It probably shouldn't be, but
no, it's one location is the way the legislation, the language is.
Mr. Iverson, have you given any more thought to what that looks like or how you do that?
The university has already established a working group, which I'm part of, to try to implement this. We're looking at a number of different options as to how this will be implemented. The one overarching theme in our working group is that it has to be a good fan experience. In other words, when the general public goes to an event like this, they're really going for entertainment, and we don't want to make their entertainment experience a bad one where they won't come back. We're going to look to make this as pleasurable as an experience. If they want to partake and have a beer at the stadium, we want to make that work for them and so they can see the game, and we're going to endeavor to do that.
Well, Mr. Iverson, they'd like to see the team win. That would be
entertaining.
Couldn't
agree more, and that would help ticket sales as well.
That would be entertaining. And, Mr. Chair, the only other issue that was brought to my attention, and this might be something that Representative Atkins wants to get into as well, is I guess goes to what is available, what is sold, what kind of alcohol, what kind of beer even, and kind of what parts of state law actually apply to this or could apply to this this provision.
So I'm sure you're asking me the question.
No, I think I'll leave that on the table and see if Representative Atkins wants to tackle that now or in a different discussion.
That was as good a time as any.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Michelle. And I guess I would start with a question for Mr. Iverson to the extent that he knows. The piece that Senator Michelle and I and Senator Gerlach, Representative Hoppe and others on the House side have chatted about a little bit, I'll come to in a minute. I think that's just sort of a punctuation on the end of the sentence. The question that keeps coming up from sports fans that I hear from is what sort of, to the extent you know, we understand it's going to be conveniently located within TCF, but do you know what sort of products? Have you gotten that far along in the discussions?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Atkins, we have not, and primarily because there are a couple of questions that need to be answered before we can start to determine that. Number one, probably the biggest one, is are the regents going to change their policy to allow sponsorship of Gopher Athletics from alcohol? And if there is no sponsorship, that would, shall I say, open up other possibilities, a broader range of possibilities. If the university decides to, the regents decide to go down the sponsorship road, that would tend to direct in one direction or the other what products would be available, I would think. Now, I'm way above my pay grade here talking about this, and there are better minds than mine as far as marketing and all of those kinds of agreements. So I can just say that we are starting to think about that. We are looking at possibilities. There are 75 Division I schools that take alcohol sponsorships across the country. We're reviewing all of those as close as Iowa and Iowa State. The university has never done that, and so it's something we're looking at very carefully.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Iverson, I raise it because the question has come up mostly from people who go to Gophers games. Is it just going to be beer? Is it going to be other sorts of spirits and that kind of thing? And I've uniformly told them I don't think the board is that far along, and I don't think that the legislature is, other than the fact, I mean, it goes back to the original principle forwarded primarily by the House folks, that if you're going to have it in the suites, that people in regular seats who are taxpayers too ought to have it, have something available to them. And I try to reiterate to folks that care about this issue that that's as far as we've gotten. It comes back to the legislature after a couple years under the 2014 date, but in the meantime, I trust that the Board of Regents will make good, positive fan experience kind of decisions. The one clarification that we had, and it came up as a question, was that 340A.909, I know people don't necessarily memorize the statute numbers, but any taxpayer-funded, publicly funded building, temporary or otherwise, state fair, whatever it happens to be, you have to at least have a Minnesota brewed beer available. Not just that's not the only thing available, but that's got to be one of the products that's available. The question came up, does that apply to TCF? My response was yes, and then I checked, and the answer was probably yes. But the caveat was the university, and rightly so, university land-grant institution, there's certain things that apply and apply differently. The amendment that I had simply says that, yes, 348.909, just says you have to have a Minnesota brewed beer as one of the options. That literally is all that's to the amendment. So I consider, you know, unless there's a violent reaction in opposition or something like that, I don't consider that a substantive kind of change. I just wanted to make sure that it was brought before this group and people thought it was a good idea.
We don't want to take up the amendment right now.
Well, I don't – do we have the section? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention at that point.
Chris, A17.
If we can do the amendment to this section, I would offer the A17 amendment.
Okay. Representative Atkins offers the A17 amendment, and you did pretty much explain it. Did you want Mr. Iverson to comment on it?
And Mr. His nodding was good.
He did not, but
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to this provision at all. It's something that actually has been talked about internally at the university as well. I see no reason that the university would have any objection to this.
Okay. Any discussion on the A17? Then all those in favor of adopting the A17 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say no. And the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
And yes, Senator Michelle.
So at least one more follow-up, if you'd permit. So Mr. Iverson, either the actual language before us or maybe something that we're doing, just are we setting a precedent here? I'm wondering about the other athletic facilities on campus.
Mr. Chairman and members, My understanding of the language is that that would be left up to the Board of Regents. I have not had any discussions about that issue with them. Okay. At this point, this language just deals with TCF Bank Stadium.
Okay. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one other question for you, Mr. Iverson. Do you have, or if you don't now, can you provide us when you have updated revenue numbers in terms of what difference this makes? We heard a couple years ago that it was $1.5 million to, and I always look to Senator Michel because I know he's followed this issue closely, but I think it was $1.5 million to $2 million in revenue was not being recognized because alcohol was unavailable at TCF. If you, as you sit here today, have updated numbers or guesstimates or estimates, I'd appreciate that. But otherwise, just a simple request that as you do update those numbers, we'd kind of like to know what it is.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I will be happy to provide the numbers. It's a little more complex than a simple number in that these contracts, particularly for the premium seating, some are for a year, some are for 2 years, some are for 3 years, and they have been discounted over what the original price was. Some have been sold in or out for a few years, so it will be difficult to get you a straight answer in a 2-year trial, but I will do the best I can to provide you the numbers of the real dollars that we realize.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Iverson, that's all we're asking for those of us that are going to be around for a little while longer. It would be, and I assume you're going to be around for a little while longer, it'd be nice to get that information, and we'll mail that to Senator Michel and Senator Gerlach.
We'll have different titles then.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
All right, Senator Michel.
So, Mr. Iverson, maybe a follow-up to that same similar question from Representative Atkins, but so when the original stadium legislation was passed in 2006, we must have had plugged in some number for revenue from alcohol in the suites. If you don't have that off the top of your head, I think that'd be interesting to know, because basically since the legislature, took that away, you've had a hole in trying to operate and run and pay for that facility. Do you recall that one off the top of your head?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, the sale of alcohol in the suites, the actual sale of it is probably de minimis.
Yeah, it's the suite revenue.
It's the value of the suite to the person that's choosing to purchase that commodity. The commodity price dropped when they didn't have the opportunity to serve alcohol to their guests. And therefore, in order to sell them, we discounted the suites. I can get you that number and be happy to provide that for you, the amount we have discounted over the first 3 years. Is it a quid pro quo? I can't tell you that because we had the economic crisis as well. And so, you know, it's a marketplace, and this was a factor in that.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, that thank you, Mr. Iverson, for reminding me that it's what the availability of alcohol in the suites does to the suite revenue and the value of the suites in a market that has a lot of athletic suites. And so this actually stood out, the lack of availability in the U of M suites, I'm certain, took a hit. I just heard anecdotes that people were throwing back their suites or not using them as much. So it would be interesting to see some numbers on that, Mr. Iverson, so we'll just lay that on the table for you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Then what I'll ask is maybe Senator Michel would like to move.
Remove the House language?
Remove the House language because that's what we amended. So Senator Michel will move House language lines 2.4 to 3.2. That would be Section 3 of the House language as amended. Any discussion then? See none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails. Adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and members, I just want to thank the Senate and for doing this and the House members. I think it's a good movement by the university. They've showed a good faith effort to make movement, and I appreciate that the members here have acknowledged the change, and certainly we want the university to be successful, and some of that involves adult beverage. So say Senator Reinhart and myself are in the general public, and Representative Hoppe and Senator Michelle are in the suites. We'd like to be able to share a beverage, the same beverage they have. So just
move to reconsider.
But just thank you to the members here, and thank you for the university for being open to executing a more wise implementation. So thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay. All right, then. We're going to hold off on Senator Howe's piece again. And let's go to Section 4. Let's take up the wine educator provision. Members, we're on this would be Section 4 on the Senate provision, Section 5 on the House side. It's on page R3. This is the wine educator license. And the there are two differences between the language, and I want to talk about both of them, and then we can make a motion. The first item I'll bring up, which is in the House language, lines 3.29 to 3.31. One sentence, and this was a piece that was in the original bill that I suggested could have been left on the cutting room floor in committee. And I made a case, and the Senate committee did so. We took it out. It's still in the House language, and I'll explain why. I'm not enormously wedded to whether this is in or out, but I just thought if people agree with what I had to say, then we can do that. And this is the point. The language simply says, wine educators may conduct classes and dispense wine for tasting purposes in an amount not to exceed 5 ounces per hour per person for a maximum of 3 hours to any one class in one day. And I thought that was very technical and complex, and it occurred to me as it would be completely unenforceable. How would you ever know that? And I asked the proponent of the bill where that came from, and she said that she had taken it from another section of statute dealing with cooking. And while I applaud the due diligence and giving us comfort language in the limitations hereof, I suggested that was overly complex, overly detailed, excessively micromanaging, and was completely unenforceable. And so I suggested that we drop that from the bill. And we did so. So I don't know what the House members feel, if anybody feels strongly that should remain in or not, if there's a reason for it. Otherwise, my proposal would be to drop that. Is there anybody on the House side that wanted to say anything?
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Representative Atkins. It might be helpful at least to ask if there's any, since, I mean, we didn't have a great deal of testimony regarding that particular provision, and I'm not telling you how to do your job, but you may want to ask if there's anybody that cares about the issue that wants to be heard on that topic that might inform both representatives and senators' thoughts.
And we have somebody who's interested in the issue. Come on up. Welcome to the committee. And please identify yourself for the record. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Michelle Tuckner, Director of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement. Thank you for letting me come and speak with you here today. We do have some things about this particular wine educator bill that if we have an opportunity to speak to, we would. There hasn't been a lot of opportunity for testimony. In this particular portion where you're talking about the restriction on how much they can serve, there are other statutes that do speak to that. Is it necessary? No. Is it enforceable? There's a lot of statutes that are difficult to enforce, but it sets guidelines, and I think that's one of the things to remember is the importance that it does give that presenter or that educator some guidelines on how much to serve. Without that, it allows that educator to serve as much as they like, and over-service is sort of a concern of ours.
Okay. Any discussion? Any questions? Ms. Tuckner. Senator Hall.
I don't have it for her, but just to say, as the one of the authors of the bill, I'm not either way on this. We can go and keep it. We can take it out if it's a big deal. I was going with the chair on this one, though.
Okay. I have a note here that Ms. Jennifer Chu, did she want to testify on this specific? We're not talking about the overall. We're talking about just this particular provision on whether it should stay in the bill or not.
Thank you, Chairman and members. My name is Jennifer Chu. And in regards to this, I think it's really, everyone pretty much agrees, as even Michelle said, that this is language that is comfort language and probably not enforceable. So from my viewpoint, it's not a make or break. I guess the only difference, in my opinion, is when we get into, like, fiscal notes and things like that, that's where it seemed to affect the fiscal impact, per se. So that would just be the only thing I would throw out there for concern. I personally don't think it's necessary, because if you look at everything in the bill, it's we really tried to make it very strict, and we do have a lot of other guidelines in there. And in particular, the TIPS, or similar to TIPS training, where you are specifically taught on pouring and all of that. And as a professional wine educator, me personally, I do not want to overserve, because I would not want to lose this license, and I would not want my insurance to go up.
Mm-hmm. And if I could ask Ms. Chu, you're required to have insurance, dram shop insurance, for these types of things, and that would cover the issue of over-serving already, right?
Correct, and that's why I say, you know, I'm Senator Hall pretty much spoke for me. I'm not completely opposed, or, you know, this isn't a polarizing topic for me, but I do feel that there are other provisions in the bill where this is not necessary.
Okay. All right. Is there any... Ms. Tuckner, do you have something else to say?
Mr. Chair, members, I agree with what Jennifer has to say. One of the things that you referred to, though, with the insurance aspect, is if you look at the statute that it leads to for insurance, they would need to have sales of $25,000 a year to require any insurance. Anything less than $25,000 would not require any insurance, and that's a rather significant amount. So they could technically operate without insurance as long as they kept their sales under that amount.
Okay. Right. Any discussion among committee members then? Okay. Well, then that's one issue. And then let's get to the second point, and then we'll talk about what language we'll accept. The second point is a provision that was in the House language. That would be lines 4.17 and 1.8. It says, notwithstanding any law or ordinance to the contrary, a holder of an off-sale license may also have and utilize a wine educator license. And I understand this was a point of some contention, and that the authors of the bill, both Senator Hall and Representative Kiefer, have discussed that and decided that that would be okay to drop that. So is there any discussion on the that particular item? Okay. All right. Well, then what I'm going to do then is I will propose that, I should say this, I'll have Senator Hall move the Senate language in the Section 4 in its entirety, lines 3.9 to 3.34, and that would be everything that the House has with the exception of those two pieces. And then if somebody wants to move the others, we can discuss that. So why don't we handle it that way?
I would so move.
Senator Hall then moves adoption of the Senate language, lines 3.9 to 3.34. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails. Then I could ask at this time, is there anybody that wants to move either of those other two provisions?
Mr.
Chair, how about if I say this?
Representative Atkins.
I don't think that the two provisions need to be moved back into the bill. And visiting with folks and with the language that the both the House and the Senate files contain, you've got belts and suspenders and elastic waistbands, for that matter, built into this as far as the wine educator provision. So I think that it should suffice. I think it's going to work. If it doesn't, I suspect we're going to hear from people that it's not working, and it'll come back before this body. So that's on one speaking for one member of the House. I don't know where the other House conferees are at on it, but I do think that and I give a lot of credit to Ms. Chu and the folks that she worked with, and Senator Hall and our House folks, in putting together a pretty strong language that allows for this.
Okay. All right. You are on that. Then, Senator Hall, are you done with the vote?
Yeah, we're okay. Done, yep.
Then, members, let's go back to page R1. And let me see if I tee this up here correctly. This is a provision that the House had, the Senate did not, and the concept is that we have no, it's generally understood that a farm winery would exist on a farm, however, it is not required by law. And before that becomes an issue, the House has put in language that simply states that it ought to be that way. And an issue was raised with the exact language. I don't think there's any disagreement on the concept that this ought to be zoned agricultural. However, the issue was raised that the particular definition used was in the tax area of statute under definitions of ag land, and it required a minimum of 10 acres contiguous. The grape growers have spoken up and said that is not workable for their industry, because oftentimes grapes are grown on much smaller parcels and they may not be contiguous depending on the particular ground. And so we've asked council to come up with something that meets the need, the concept, but also doesn't shut out grape growers. So I'm going to ask Mr. Stang if he could read us some language that could be a substitute for this section.
Mr. Chairman, members of the conference, on lines 1.23, that sentence running on to 1.24, strike that, and this is one suggestion. The language would read, a farm winery license must be issued for operation of a farm winery on land that is zoned for agricultural purposes.
Okay. If members understand that. And then I know that the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association had some interest in this. Maybe if Mr. Bagnoli would like to maybe just quickly say, does that work for you? If you could come to the table maybe. And I just want to cross the T's and dot the I's. Does that oral amendment to this, does that meet your needs?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes.
Okay. And then Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a follow-on question, Mr. Stang. That zoning determination will be made at various local units of government across the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reinert, that would be my understanding of that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. And Senator Howe, then, does that amendment meets your needs, and would you like to move that oral amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I do have a question for Mr. Stang on this, because sometimes, dependent upon the local jurisdiction, it might not be zoned agriculture, but look like it's agricultural. I know we have a wide variety of land that's zoned on it. I'm wondering if there's maybe some other terminology other than the zoning of that. Because some of these wineries can operate on an acre or 2 acres. 2 acres of vine is a lot of vineyards. I'm concerned because some jurisdictions view the zoning of agricultural land that if it's less than 10 acres, they'll change the classification. I can speak from personal experience down in Red Wing. I lived out in an agricultural zoned area, but I had 11 acres of land, and I was the smallest parcel, and they changed it to the classification to homestead, residential homestead. and so the classification changed. I'm not sure how we look at the classification versus the zoning. And maybe Mr. Stang could speak to the difference between classification and zoning.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm outside my area of competence as of this moment. The concept came in at the beginning of the committee hearing. This is the best I came up with in 5 minutes, and those are kind of local government issues that I'm not familiar with, and they may be very good questions.
I'm wondering, before we put this into statute, I'm just wondering if we shouldn't vet this either a little bit more and not either, you know, accept the language or put it in where it has to be on a farm winery has to be located on a minimum of 2 acres. I think that would be acceptable.
Well, Senator, how would it? Let me suggest this.
Would that be acceptable? Well, if we went, maybe
well,
we should
Senator
ask.
Howard, I'm just saying that. If you want to go ahead, Mr. Bagnall, if you want to speak to that.
Yeah. If we limit it to 2 acres, would that be acceptable? Yeah.
You stood up.
I think if we limit it to 2 acres, then you're not inside of a city.
Mr. Chair, Joe Bagnoli, on behalf of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, I think that what we're driving at is we have heard that the question has come up, not this specific one, but similar ones. Can I have a farm winery license for Grand Avenue in St. Paul?
Yeah, no.
And that has been dealt with. Of course you can. There's no farm. It's a commercial business corridor. Except for if you look in the statute, there was an implication in the statute that suggests that there is things that are grown on the land and that the winery is part and parcel with the. And this was the way that, in working with, unfortunately, Jim Arlt, who was previously with the department and is no longer, this is what we talked about. I like you, and I see council is chatting back here. 2 acres, but there has to be something grown nearby, vines on the land.
Okay.
That's the direction we're trying to get to, I think, and I don't know enough about you're beyond my well. So.
Senator Reiner?
Well, just to add to the mix, I do think, I mean, either we leave this language out unless council's come up with some brilliant solution, you know, or we do have to have some sort of hook back into the LGUs who know their communities and land best. And I would just, you know, offer that in the city of Duluth, we have 5 and 10 acre parcels within the city that are zoned as suburban. So the acreage is not necessarily – the acreage alone I don't think is sufficient. I do think we have to have something above and beyond that. But I'm also comfortable not going there. This is – we're getting a little bit into the weeds on this.
Did you want to
say? I just had a question for
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and either for Mr. Stang, Mr. McCormick. If we have a couple competing definitions for ag land. We've got the zoning way of doing it, or we've got the under 273, which is for tax purposes. Mm-hmm. Both identify ag property. The point being to make sure that farm wineries are on ag land. As I understood the concern that was raised by our Senate counterparts, it was in using the tax definition under 273, it required contiguous acreage, and it required 10 acres or more. What if we just said it's under 273.13, but without the contiguous acreage or the 10-acre requirement? I'm looking to... to you guys more so than
does that matter then, or does that essentially take away the definition of what ag land is then?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to look at the statute again to see what else it says.
Okay. And while Mr. Chair, if I might,
Representative Atkins.
Well, council is looking at that. The other thing that I would suggest that. Is for Senator Howe's concern is that to the extent that we don't get it precisely right, keep in mind that this is for prospective matters. It doesn't – anybody that's operating under current law is not going to have any problem at all. It's just what – the reason the House wanted to have something like this in there is because when the question comes in from somebody that calls and they say, I want to do a farm winery, our folks have just sort of been saying, well, it's, you know, it is a farm winery. But if they ever explicitly ask the question, does it need to be on a farm or ag land, the answer is no. The running joke that we've had is it could be in Representative Mullery's garage in Minneapolis or in his backyard, which clearly is not what, when we started talking about farm wineries, that's not where we were intending to go. So even if we can figure out something that makes sense for now and we come back a year from now and tweak it a little bit, at least we don't have any farm wineries that are opening up in somebody in Minneapolis's backyard, you know, half a mile from the IDS tower.
I think it will work. Mr. Chair?
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if we could maybe just be just a tad bit more inclusive and maybe say zoned agricultural, classified as agricultural, or operating under a conditional use permit as agricultural.
Senator Howe, I think we may have something for you that could work.
That would give local authorities an opportunity to make that determination.
As former mayor, Mr. Chair, the former mayor's in the room. There's it does give, you know, if you've got a city council that wants to have a little bit more latitude, then they could figure out a way under a conditional use. You have the farm winery folks come in and say, this is what I want to do. We've only got an acre and a half. That might be these guys may have an even better idea, but I think that's acceptable too.
Yeah, if we could put that, I would move that.
Do you want a little bit of time?
Mr. Chairman, I look at the cross-reference again, and I think something along the lines of what Representative Atkins suggested could work.
Okay. Do you want a little bit of time to work on that, or do you know it?
How about something like this? Let's go back to the revisor side-by-side, and line 2.1 before the period on that sentence, something like, comma, except that the requirement of 10 contiguous acres shall not apply. So then it just ties into what's a land for an agricultural purpose, which is further defined in the statute. And I think, you know, I could read it if people are interested, but the land had to have been used for agricultural purposes, but there's no acreage limit or acreage floor, I guess, anymore with the language I suggested.
Senator Howe, does that make sense to you?
I think if we just went with that 1.24, just said a farm winery on agricultural land, comma, either as zoned, classified, or operating under a conditional use permit. And you're not cross, because you're cross-referencing this, and their definition of that cross-reference is those acreages. And I don't think we should cross-reference to a tax definition in the code. I think we should just leave that cross-reference out and define it either as classified, zoned, or operating under a conditional use permit.
Okay, Senator Howe has expressed his preference for an oral amendment to this. This is House language. So what were the comments on the House side of the options that we have before us? What is your...
Mr. Chairman, I expressed mine. I can live with what Senator Howe has said, but I also suggested the language that Mr. Stank came up with. So I would throw it open to other members if one sort gives more comfort than
Representative
others.
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, are we... If we make these changes, are we going to run afoul of our friends on either the tax committee or local government, or are we going to run the risk of having a lot of new five-acre wineries show up in Senator Reinhardt's district?
Hopefully within walking distance.
Mr. Chair, I think it'd either have to be classified, zoned, or operating under a conditional use permit. It would have to go back to the local, and the assessor is going to use the highest and best use. So whatever can be taxed at the highest, that's what they're going to use it for.
Okay. All right. Well, then, since Senator Howe is the member on the committee, and while we appreciate Mr. Stang's efforts, we're going to go with Senator Howe's preference of the language on the conditional use permit. Would you repeat your language then? You're moving to amend the House language.
Yep. After on line 1.24, after on agricultural land, and say as operating in a agricultural zoned. Well, let me change that. As operating under a agricultural classification, zoning, or conditional use permit, period, and delete everything after that on line 1.24, delete everything on 2.1, and delete everything on 2.2.
Slowly. Could you repeat that one more time so we make sure we get it?
Slowly.
Repeat it slowly.
On line 1.24 of a farm winery on agricultural land, comma, operating in an agricultural classification, comma, zoning, or a conditional use permit.
Let me, can I read it?
Sure.
I thought there was a little problem with it, but maybe reading it all. A farm winery license must be issued for operation of a farm winery on agricultural land operating under an agricultural classification. Zoning may be the word I have a problem with, or conditional use permit. Zone?
Zone would be fine.
Okay. Does that work then?
Yep.
Okay, here it is. A farm winery license must be issued for operation of a farm winery on agricultural land operating under an agricultural classification, zone, or conditional use permit.
Okay.
Satisfactory.
I just heard that. And any comment from committee members? Senator Reinert.
Mr. Bagnoli, head nod.
You say, was there an affirmative head nod?
I didn't.
Maybe we should make it formalize it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli, I'm at the MLBA, and I'm a little beyond my scope, but in the city of Minneapolis and city of St. Paul, we've gone through, and some of you may have read this, about chicken coops on tops of people's houses or in people's backyards, and I'm just... I don't know enough about how a CUP works, and I know that there are former mayors and others that may know a little bit how this would work, but I would be I think we're all trying to get to the same place. I don't know if a CUP, given the right city council in the right district in some of the two cities that I named, where growing grapes on the roof of an old factory might be considered a farm by some. And I don't know if that is the view of most folks, even if it's done under a CUP and would be in an industrial zone. There are some very nice big roofs in St. Paul and Minneapolis. So.
Okay, Senator Reinert and then Representative Sanders.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say I'm supportive of Senator Howe's proposed language, having spent time on a city council, you know, and just looking at my own community. Every community has to have a comprehensive land use plan, and that plan will include or not include agriculturally zoned land, and each community will decide what the definition of that ag zone land is. And if there is some unique circumstance down the road, you've now given local governments the flexibility via a conditional use permit to try and capture that. So I think this actually is pretty tight, and it feels like it addresses the concern of a storefront saying, oh, hey, we're ag land because you haven't defined it. So.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I guess I'll defer, I guess, in some instances to the mayors that we have sitting at the table, but in some instances I feel like we are kind of trying to do a lot of work on the fly here that may or may not have unintended consequences, that perhaps has tax implications or other local government type of implications. I don't know what the solution is, if current law is good enough for another 6 months until the next legislative session to fully address this issue correctly, or if we want to go with the oral amendment. But it seems kind of from all sides we're guessing and hoping that this is a correct fix.
All right. Mr. Magnoli.
Mr. Chair, with the explanation of, and I started with my comments with, I am out of my element, but with the explanation of former council member, current Senator Reiner, former council member Senator Reiner, and former Mayor Howe and former Mayor Atkins, and maybe I've missed a few, I'm comfortable with where we're at.
Okay. I would say, members, that what Representative Sanders says is true. The flip side is true as well. If there is a problem, you can always then come back and fix and adjust then as well. This idea was not in the Senate bill. It came through the House, but I'm supportive of the concept. I think farm wineries ought to be on ag land, and it sounds like we've hashed this out pretty well. So I'm going to support the Howe amendment. Any further discussion? Okay, well then, everybody's heard the oral amendment as restated by Senate Counsel. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails. And now we have that provision, that Section 2 of House language before us. Representative Atkins, do you want to move that?
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins moves adoption of the House language as amended, lines 1.21 to 2.3. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails, and that provision is adopted. Okay, then I think the rest of this should move relatively quickly, members. We've finished. I want to review, make sure, because I know we've jumped around. Section 1 was taken care of. Section 2 was just adopted. 3. We're on Section 3. This is the, this would be page R2. Section 3 on the Senate side. Section 4 on the House side. This would be the wine festival. And it's identical.
Well, I want to make sure we get it, too. I'll just do this. It'll be methodical.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, somebody said something.
Would it just be in order to adopt all of the sections that are identical?
I don't like the way she
is that yes. All that's left? I just want to make 100% certain we have.
There's sections 8, 9, 10.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, that are all identical.
Let's do that.
Are members clear on exactly what's identical and what's not?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I am, and I think that's an excellent idea by Representative Anderson. I do have one short oral amendment to Section 8 of the House language, Section 7 of the Senate language.
Okay, where are you at?
That's not identical.
Oh, so Representative Anderson said Section 8.
Identical.
Okay.
Representative Anderson moves adoption of all additional language which is identical between the two bills. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails. Okay, then the remaining sections which are different are, which one are we at?
Section
7 of the Senate bill.
Eight of the House bill.
And Section 8 of the House bill. This would be the Winnebago Craft Brewer, and I am informed by the authors, both Senator Rosen in the Senate and Representative Gunther in the House, that we would be accepting the House language. So, Representative Hoppe moves adoption of Section 8 of the House language, lines 6.1 to 6.9, but you're saying you have an amendment?
Yeah, I have a short oral amendment at the end of line 6.7 of the House language. After the period in line 6.7, all I want to do is put a line that says this section expires January 1st, 2013.
And Representative Hoppe, can you speak to that amendment and what's the history, or what's the necessity for that?
Well,
it's essentially a sunset.
Yeah, and we can have Mr. McCormick speak to it as well, but I think this is something that there was a little bit of trepidation about, and I think people were looking at what we're doing in this section is having somebody come in who's not registered in Minnesota and giving them the 1 day or 2 day, whatever it was, exemption, and we just want to try it out and see how it works.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend moving this to after 6.9, after 6 and 645.021, I'd say comma, and expires on December 31st, 2012.
Mr. Chair, that's what I meant to say.
So, Representative Hoppe, we're not amending after line 6.7. You're doing it after 6.9. It's with the December 31st, 2012. Try it to see how it works. Okay. Do members have any discussion of members? From the members? Anybody from Winnebago want to comment? Then seeing none, Representative Hoppe moves that oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. And the amendment is adopted. Then Representative Hoppe moves adoption of House language, Section 8, line 6.1 through 6.9 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 As opposed say no. And the motion prevails. Section 8 is adopted. Okay, and then we've
the only other thing is Section 11.
We took care of the Langseth and Higgins, and then we have the revised instructions. The last item we have is on page R7. The only difference between on the revised instructions is the House has an effective date for the revised instructions. I guess it's that section, effective the day following final enactment. So it sounds like a very technical thing. So we'll go ahead and we'll have Representative Lilly moves adoption of the House language, Section 12, lines 7.14 through 7.18. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no. And the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Let me take care of you. Then, members, Representative Atkins moves that the Conference Committee report on Senate File 2392 be now adopted. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. And the motion prevails, and the Conference Committee report on Senate File 2392 is adopted. Thank you, members.
Here at TCS.
Meeting is adjourned. Okay. All right.
Well done.
That's all I really want.
So, Chris, what happens now?
Well, that's a cheating.
That's right. You took that out of the chamber? Yeah, I carry this down.
I had to take that back.
I will.
Thank you. See you, Dan.
We handle the rest.
Perfect.
Can I get a copy of all this?
They're going to do
all of my stuff.
I figured that's the plan.
We're going to look at that, make sure we have all those in there.
You're going to go to the advisor and give it to them, and they will send you.
Yep.
I get out of
there. I'll carry this back. Are you going back to the chamber? Okay. Can I give you this? Throw that back on the shelf. Okay, thank you.
As soon as we get that, we'll shoot it to you.
Yes. Thank you.
I appreciate it. I was thinking about that. I'm like, that's a great question. I was going to introduce myself.
It's Chris Stang.
Proactive
advisor.
All right.
All
the good
things.
Rob, sort of blocked from getting back around.
Hey, Richard, can you help me pick up the folders?
Yeah.
Except the name tags for the house details.
Yeah, I can tell you those. I can tell you those.
Oh, Rob, I think we're still recording.